I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Have you ever wondered what happens between the time you order a product from Amazon on your computer and it arrives at your door? Our guest, Spencer Soper, investigated complaints about working conditions at an Amazon warehouse in the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania. He wrote about what he found for the Morning Call of Allentown, where he's a senior business writer. He spoke with current and former employees about brutal heat, long hours, and a demanding work pace that left them anxious about their jobs. We asked Spencer Soper to join us on Radio Times to talk about his two-month investigation, and he joins us from the Morning Call in Allentown. And Spencer Soper, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for having me on your show.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Catherine Ruckelshaus. She's legal co-director for the National Employment Law Project, and that's a nonprofit that advocates for part-time, temporary, and subcontracted workers. And Catherine Ruckelshaus, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're happy to have you both here. Let me also add that we did invite a representative from Amazon and from OSHA, that's the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, that investigated conditions at this workhouse to join us, and they both declined. Spencer, let me begin with you, and if you could describe for our listeners this warehouse that is located near I-78 in Pennsylvania.
I'm sorry, you want me to describe the...
Just how big are we talking here when we talk about this warehouse?
I believe it's a... Well, there's actually two warehouses that are adjacent, one larger, one smaller. I believe the larger one is about... I think the footprint is 700,000 square feet, but there's multiple levels, so I believe it's about a million square feet of usable space.
And when and why did you begin your investigation?
Well, this new fulfillment center was established a year ago this summer, so a little more than a year ago. And obviously it was a big deal because they were hiring people, and we have a lot of people desperate for jobs. So it's been fairly big news since it opened. And then we've touched on various stories since that time. And we had some previous stories. And after those stories ran, some employees started reaching out to us and sharing their accounts of what it's like to work in there.
And one of the things that they were complaining about, and was a hot summer in Pennsylvania, but inside the warehouse, the heat inside the warehouse. Can you tell us what some of these employees told you?
Yes. Well, basically all of them told us it was very hot, that it would get very hot, particularly on the day shift. It would get hotter. A few of them were privy to emails that are sent out within the warehouse. These are the warehouse. The heat index is monitored within the warehouse. The heat index is a measure that factors in humidity for a real feel temperature gauge. And a couple of those people told us that, you know, they would receive emails saying that the heat index exceeded 110 degrees.
110 degrees inside a warehouse.
Yes.
Where people are working.
Yes.
How does someone work under those conditions?
I don't know. I didn't work there, but the concern that many of the employees raised was not just the heat alone, but that the production rates they were expected to maintain were never reduced. And a lot of them maintained these production rates would be difficult to meet under regular weather conditions, but that in the heat it was even more difficult.
Give us a sense of what one of the or some of these production rates were, and then Catherine Ruckelshaus, I'll get you in on the conversation. Spencer, go ahead.
Well, there are various jobs in this warehouse, so they have an inbound side and an outbound side. This is different from a typical warehouse in that it's a little more labor intense. Typical warehouses that are serving retail locations or maybe taking in large shipments of product, breaking them down, but still in large boxes and getting them out to stores. In this warehouse, they are taking in inventory and breaking it down to the one item level, because these are orders going to an end customer's home. So the rates that these folks are expected to maintain vary by their job. There are packers, stowers, pickers. A packer would be someone who is actually taking inventory, putting it in a box, and sending it down the conveyor for shipment. A picker is someone who is, you know, walking through the warehouse. We heard estimates of around, you know, 13, 15 miles a day that these people would walk in a shift, walking around the warehouse, gathering items to bring to the packers. The stowers are people who are breaking down the incoming shipments and storing them in the warehouse so that the pickers can go in and grab them. So the rates that they're expected to maintain vary depending on their job and the the size of the items they're handling. We seem to speak to a lot of pickers. That seems to be a lot of the people we spoke to were employed as pickers. And in particular, one man said it was like one item every 30 seconds he was expected to pick, or I think 1,200 items in a 10-hour shift.
Let me get you in on the conversation, Catherine Ruckelshaus, as someone that advocates for part-time, temporary, and subcontracted workers. Let me ask you about the heat conditions in this particular warehouse in Pennsylvania. Does that shock you? I mean, does that seem like a sweatshop to you?
Well, it does. I mean, I think it's almost literally a sweatshop if it's that hot. You know, what we have seen in a lot of these low-wage jobs, unfortunately, is that employers are increasingly turning to temp firms like Spencer's article profiles to hire and recruit workers. And because that generates such a high turnover in these low-paying, difficult, and even dangerous jobs, it gives very little incentive for the employers to fix the problem. So if it's hot like it was in this warehouse, they just have a ready supply of workers available to come replace the ones who can't hack it, and they do that through the temp firms.
Well, and I do want to get to the firm that hires these employees, but according to Spencer's article, they're making something like $10 to $12 an hour. Kathy, is that a low-wage job from your perspective?
It is. I mean, minimum wage right now, it comes out to less than $20,000 a year. So imagine trying to live on $20,000 a year if you're working full-time. And that's these jobs just aren't paying enough for people to make ends meet. So they either have to have a dual-income household, or they have to rely on government systems of support, or they have to work another job because it's just not economically sustainable.
And what about this idea? This is a picker that Spencer wrote about in his article, in a 10-hour shift expected to pick something like 1,200 items. Does that seem onerous from your perspective?
Yes. I mean, it does harken back to, the jungle that Upton Sinclair chronicled in his book, and the high line speeds that have been on chicken processing and meat processing lines, you know, since the turn of the last century. So I think it's a new industry where we're seeing these pressures for high productivity, and but it's not a new phenomenon in terms of these low wage, no college degree required, and very difficult jobs.
Spencer, let me go back to you. Now, you spoke to about 20, current and former employees?
Yes, and that includes a mix of both permanent Amazon employees and temporary workers.
And is there any way to know how many people at this plant are permanently employed and some how many are part-time?
Since this story ran, Amazon released a statement. It was about 1,300 or close to between 1,300 and 1,400 people that have permanent positions there. They have not said how many temporary employees work there. When I started reporting this, I got estimates from people. You know, the temporary and permanent production line workers are working side by side in the warehouses, and I had estimates ranging. Anywhere about 80% temp or 75% temp to 20 or 25% permanent, but also that folks I've interviewed say that has shifted, that they are getting more permanent people in, but I don't have a breakdown, and that is a question I asked specifically to Amazon that they would not clarify.
They didn't answer that question yet?
No, they told us how many permanent people work in the warehouse. They would not tell us how many temporary employees they have in the warehouse.
And Catherine Ruckelshaus, are they required to do that?
No, they're not. There's nothing illegal about using a temporary staffing firm or employment agency to staff up your workplace. It's really just if it's done in such a way that you evade labor and employment standards, or if you try to create confusion with the smoke and mirrors about who's really the employer and who's responsible for my working conditions, that's where it ends up looking a little fishy. And here, the descriptions of the jobs that the temp workers are doing versus what the permanent workers are doing on these line jobs don't sound any different to me, and it really is it would raise a lot of red flags for me. If I were a regulator going in doing inspections, I would wonder why, in fact, they're having yellow, white badges and blue badges on the workers when they're, in fact, doing the same jobs.
And are temporary workers protected the way permanent workers are by laws in this country?
Yes, they are. They oftentimes, and we see this in the article, they aren't entitled to certain benefits like the Family and Medical Leave Act, for instance, that permits people to take or requires people to take employers to permit workers to take unpaid leave if they need to for a medical or family emergency. If you don't have the requisite number of hours, you wouldn't be covered by that, for instance. And here, it looks like the employer churns off the workers after a certain number of hours, and they're allowed to reapply, but they have to basically take a little time off before they reapply. So, but otherwise, overtime, minimum wage, health and safety, workers' comp, all of that is the same regardless of what the label you're wearing says.
Spencer, let me go back to you and also back to your article. There were complaints about the heat conditions, over 100 degrees in this particular warehouse. Who were the complainers, and what happened to those complaints?
Well, there were multiple complaints to OSHA. OSHA heard from people who identified themselves as employees complaining about the heat. I believe one was a security guard who complained in particular about seeing pregnant women being treated in the facility, after working in the heat. Another complaint came from an emergency room doctor at a hospital near the warehouse who called to report an unsafe work environment after several people from the warehouse came to his emergency room for heat-related symptoms one day.
In fact, there were, perhaps still are, ambulances outside, waiting outside this warehouse?
I don't know if there still are, but there were... what happened there was a hot day, I don't know if it was one day or multiple days in May, where the local ambulance department made multiple responses to the Amazon warehouse, and Amazon's response to that was to actually hire the ambulance crew to station outside the warehouses, and I believe they did that on at least five hot days in June and July.
And there were a couple of days where they did actually close the facility for a while because it was so hot inside?
Yes, well, I saw in an OSHA report where they did say that Amazon initiated voluntary time off, which means employees could go home if they were concerned about the heat. They could go home without pay, and they would not be penalized for leaving work. And in one of those instances, I believe the one of the Amazon managers said so many people left that they did not even have a minimum staff to run the facility, and we're going to shut it down.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Spencer Soper, and he's a senior business reporter for the Morning Call of Allentown. We're talking about an investigative story that he's done on the Amazon warehouses up in the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania. Catherine Ruckelshaus, also with us, legal co-director for the National Employment Law Project. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY comes from Westtown School. Since 1799, Westtown has invited students pre-K through 12th grade to pursue a global education, one that helps prepare them not only for college and career, but also for life. Parents who want challenging academics and character development for their child can learn more by attending Westtown's lower and middle school open house Monday, October 10th at 8:30 a.m. Details at westtown.edu.
Imagine, if you will, listening to all your favorite WHYY FM programs without membership breaks, but knowing you support public media. Introducing YStream, a pledge-free stream of WHYY FM available during our October member campaign. Visit WHYY.org by October 12th, pledge $60, and receive your special link to listen to regular WHYY FM programs during our October fund drive. Need more information? Visit WHYY.org.
At the heart of everything we do at WHYY is one thing: storytelling. We try to inform, engage, inspire, and connect through deep, colorful stories. And NewsWorks Tonight brings together the best reporting from our network of journalists in one smart, lively regional news magazine. Weeknights at 6 on WHYY-FM. or listen online at whyy.org and newsworks.org. There's also the podcast, and you can follow Newsworks Tonight on Twitter and Facebook. And that's the story.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And if you've ever ordered anything from Amazon, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Our guest, Spencer Soper, learned about some harsh working conditions at the Lehigh warehouse for Amazon and wrote about it for the Morning Call of Allentown, where he's a senior business writer. There were complaints about a brutal heat and a demanding workflow. Also with us is Catherine Ruckelshaus. She's the legal co-director for the National Employment Law Project, and we do have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Kathy, I know you have to leave us at 10:30. I'm curious, though, about the role and responsibility of OSHA. There were complaints to OSHA about conditions in this warehouse. What is their obligation to workers here?
So OSHA is the federal agency that's required to ensure a safe and healthy workplace. Like many government agencies, it's woefully under-resourced and underfunded. It has very few inspectors. So I think the fact that it actually came to this warehouse is good, because it's a large one and it sounds like these problems are really off the charts. The problem with OSHA and its enforcement scheme is that there aren't specific standards that go to things like line speed or even heat indices. It's a very vague, healthy, and safe workplace standard. So unless there's a state agency, and I understand there's not, there aren't clear standards under Pennsylvania state law, OSHA can come in and issue a fine, but they're typically slaps on the wrist, and they don't always ensure compliance going forward because the tools are so weak under the law. And workers are not permitted under the Occupational Safety and Health Act to bring their own private action. They can't enforce it on their own. It has to be OSHA.
Let me go back to you, Spencer, and this is a timeline. This goes back to June 2nd. An Amazon warehouse worker told OSHA that the heat index in the warehouse hit 102 degrees and 15 workers had collapsed. The next day, on June 3rd, OSHA talks to Amazon managers, telling them essentially you've got to address this problem. And then on June 9th, OSHA does go to this warehouse and inspect it. Did conditions improve as a result of that inspection?
Well, the OSHA issued recommendations. I guess the ultimate outcome to this was August 18. OSHA closed its inspection. They did not issue any fines, and they issued recommendations to Amazon, saying that they did see some things that could be hazardous. And also issued recommendations, but again, those recommendations said, reduce heat and humidity in the warehouse, that sort of thing. They were not, there was no specific target. There was no measurable goal. And what Amazon has said is over the summer, they did install, and they communicated this to OSHA, that they were installing some sort of cooling system, an air conditioning system. But we've interviewed employees who said that even after that thing was installed, it would feel nice if you were in very close proximity to it, basically a big duct, two ducts, one taking air out, one blowing cool air in, a few of those throughout the warehouse. And if you were in very close proximity to that outward duct, it would feel nice. But, as you got more than 10 feet away from it, you couldn't even, there was no discernible difference, is what the workers are we're saying. And one man, when I asked him about that, described it as being like working in a convection oven while blow drying your hair.
So there was air moving around, but it was hot air.
Yes, unless you were very close to this outbound. Unless you were right next to this outbound airflow from the cooling system.
Kathy, let me go back to you and something else that Spencer writes about in his piece about a point-based disciplinary system. And I guess people got points depending on whether they did a, quote-unquote good job or a quote-unquote bad job. Is that unusual?
No, it's not unusual. And again, to me, the interesting thing was that the temps and the permanent workers had the same system and were subject to the same disciplinary rules. Those kind of three strikes and you're out absenteeism or production performance policies are unfortunately fairly common in low-wage industries, and employers have started to get into trouble if they use them in such a way to deprive workers of their rights to leave, like family and medical leave, for instance. But it's a common system, and it's very difficult for workers to complain or critique the points against them.
And are there more and more temporary workers working in this country, Kathy?
Yes, whenever we have a recession, whenever the jobs start coming back, the temp firms and the temp jobs are the first ones, and that at some level makes sense because employers are hesitant to start hiring permanent workers. What this story illustrates, though, is not that kind of cyclical, oh, the recession's easing a bit, let's hire up again. This is an entrenched business model where the employer simply uses the staffing firm to recruit and hire its very high turnover workforce.
And we're talking about a company called Integrity Staffing Solutions, ISS. This is the employment company, I guess, what, hired by Amazon to hire employees for this warehouse?
Right.
And you're saying that's, does that trouble you?
It does, simply because it doesn't look to me like Amazon is using the quote-unquote temp workers for temporary jobs. It's their core jobs that Amazon needs to have filled, and they're simply using this outsourced recruiter to bring in the workers because it's such a full-time job to bring in more and more workers when the job is so terrible and the turnover is so high.
There are many unanswered questions about this story, but I guess final question to you, Catherine Ruckelshaus, is what more do you want to know about conditions, I guess, inside this facility, but also from Amazon and even from OSHA?
So I would want to know what steps are being taken to address the problems that Spencer's outlined in his article. There doesn't seem to be any incentive on Amazon or the temp firm's part to fix the problem, and because the workers are turning over, no complaints are going to come in that are going to be sustainable. So it feels to me like we're on shifting sands and there isn't going to be compliance. So I would want to know from Amazon, how can it assure us that there will be improvement in these conditions?
Well, I know you're busy, and I appreciate you joining us for this first half of Radio Times today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And that's Catherine Ruckelshaus. She's legal co-director for the National Employment Law Project. And Spencer Soper is staying with us for the rest of the hour. He's a senior business reporter for the Morning Call of Allentown. That's here in Pennsylvania. And we've been talking about a series of articles, actually, that he has done about conditions at a Amazon facility in the Lehigh Valley, rather near Allentown, and raising some questions about working conditions there. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I should also add that we did reach out to OSHA and to Amazon to be a guest on this show, both of them declining to make someone available. Spencer, let me go back to this point system because I want to make sure our listeners understand. I asked Kathy Ruckelshaus about it, but how does that work inside this warehouse?
Well, you get, you can get a point or a fraction of a point or 1.5 points for a variety of things. Some of the most egregious violations would be, not showing up for your shift and not calling in. You would get a higher degree of points, and lesser things could be like being late, that sort of thing, or calling if you missed work but called in. And then if you accumulate 6 points, you'd be terminated if you reached 6 points. And then if you had a medical excuse or something, if you called in sick, they would still give you the demerit points, but they would remove them if you brought in a doctor's note and requested a medical waiver. So there was some recourse there. But again, if you had to supply paperwork, that sort of thing.
And did employees, the ones that you talked to, did they resent this system? Because I would say showing up for work or being on time, that doesn't seem to be too much to ask.
No, and no one had a problem with that. I think that the major problem was the production rate, and that people were in there, so they were working as fast as they possibly could, doing the best the best of their physical ability, and they were getting disciplined for failing to meet this rate. And they said that was fairly common. That was a common reason people got points, was for failing to meet this rate, and a lot of people were terminated for failing to make rate. So I don't think that they had a problem with, their employer expecting them to show up for work on time. They had a problem with the production rates that were mandated, and that working to the best of their ability, they were disciplined for not meeting those production rates.
Let me get some callers in on the conversation. In fact, we have a full bank of calls at 1-888-477-9499. And let me begin with, looks like Bart from Souderton joining us on Radio Times. And Bart, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I just had an observation about the complaint regarding the working conditions. There's plenty of us out here that work under brutal heat conditions. I do repair on construction equipment in the summertime. You see the guys working pavement, guys working on roofs. I go into production facilities, the temperature is 120 degrees inside. You come outside on a 100-degree day, it feels cool. You just suck it up, you do the job. You know, I don't really have much sympathy for somebody complaining about it being hot, because there's lots of us working under worse conditions continuously.
Bart, when we hear, though, about people collapsing on the job, does that concern you?
It does, but it just tells me they're not prepared to work at that job, and they probably shouldn't be there. They're not wearing the right clothes. They don't have enough water. You know, I go in production facilities, and it's hot and it's busy. But the first thing I think when I hear noise and activity, wow, this place is busy. This place is going to stay in business, and these places are going to give jobs for a long time.
But do you think, and I understand working outside, and certainly it was a very hot summer here in the Delaware Valley, but do you think working inside where it's, say, 110 degrees, does that seem like fair working conditions for somebody? Making 10 to 12
now? I sit between two machines blowing heat in my face at 120 degrees, and I have no place to go for 2 or 3 hours but fix this piece of equipment, and you're not going to get any sympathy out of me for that.
Okay.
I'm doing it every day.
I hear you. Well, let me give our guest, Spencer Soper, a chance to respond to that.
Thank you for that, Kathy, and I appreciate Bart's phone call and his comments, and I think a lot of people have reacted to this the same way. One distinction I'd add for Bart, he said that he spends his shift sitting between two machines, and there are stationary jobs in this warehouse, and we did not hear as many concerns from people who had the stationary jobs. A stationary job might be packing, where you're at one particular workstation, and where you might even have a fan blowing directly on you. A lot of the concerns came from pickers. These are not stationary jobs. They are in a hot warehouse where they are moving at a very rapid pace. The concerns are not just it's hot in here, but that it's hot and this production rate that we're expected to achieve. And one thing I would like to add that is rather important. I mean, this is something that we had to address in the reporting. We have people complaining that it's hot in a warehouse. So what? A lot of warehouses are hot.
Right.
It was not just the heat. It was the production rates people were expected to maintain in that heat was a big part of it as well as the temporary employment reliance, that sort of thing. But another thing that an important element in the story is that we interviewed a recruiter for a local temp staffing firm. He recruits temporary employees for warehouse jobs, and he had heard about the working conditions in Amazon as well. He estimated between 30 and 40 people that he had interviewed and placed in jobs, in similar jobs, had reported having difficult experiences there. Ordinarily, he would consider a short-term stint. If someone worked a short-term stint in a warehouse and couldn't handle it, that would be a red flag for him, he told us. But he had heard from so many people about the difficulty in Amazon, he started putting them in jobs, and they were going to those jobs and performing the functions just fine. So he no longer considers a short-term stint in an Amazon warehouse as a red flag that someone can't perform, a warehouse job.
Bart, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Spencer, was there adequate water?
Everyone interviewed said water was regularly available. They had water. They had fruit. They had ice pops. Some people were concerned about water consumption because the restroom would be was quite far, and concerned about even the length of time of their bathroom break and that cutting into their rate. So water was available to these people.
And why not open the doors? I mean, yes, it was hot outside, but would that have helped at this facility?
Well, that's a specific question we asked Amazon, and I know there's different thoughts on that in the warehouse industry, and we posed that question directly to Amazon, didn't get a response. But again, back to the it's hot in the warehouse, so what question. Some of the people we interviewed have worked various industries and even warehouse jobs in particular, who said that this one was particularly difficult, and that one man who we interviewed who worked in other warehouses said it was common when it was very hot to open dock doors on opposite sides of the warehouse just to let some fresh air circulate through, and that this was not done in the Amazon warehouse. We could not get Amazon to answer that question as to why, but he said it came up in meetings with their managers, and that when the employees asked, hey, why don't we open some doors and get some fresh air in this place, they were told that they were concerned about theft.
Let me read something that we got from Amazon. I'm sure you got it as well, Spencer, saying that we spent more than $2.4 million urgently installing industrial air conditioning units for our fulfillment centers, including the one we've been talking about. These industrial air conditioning units were online and operational by late July and early August. This is not mandated by any governmental agency. But you were saying, yes, they were installed, but they really didn't address the heat and humidity in this facility.
That's what we heard from workers, and I don't know precisely when they installed them. They said late July, but one of the OSHA complaints came in July 25. That was when the security guard called OSHA to complain about the high temperature and pregnant women being treated for heat-related symptoms.
And who was the physician who called OSHA?
They redacted that information from the we obtained records from OSHA through the Freedom of Information Act. And they redacted some information, and they redacted all identifying information from the people who filed complaints.
And what's been the response, not just from Amazon, but from others around the country to this particular story?
Well, we've heard a variety of feedback, a lot of feedback from customers who were concerned. We even had a follow-up story the week after the story ran about some customers who reacted to the story, actually initiated contact with Amazon saying, listen, you know, read about working conditions in this warehouse. I've been a customer of yours. Can you tell me what you're going to do about this? I'd just like to hear from you. And many of those customers received the same emailed statement. It was actually similar to the statement that Amazon has circulated to media. And so a lot of those people shared the responses with us. We heard from many people who said they were boycotting or just, you know, that this has given them pause about shouting. About shopping with Amazon, that sort of thing. We also heard from many people identified themselves as workers who said, yes, the story was spot on. And a couple workers who say, hey, yeah, it's not that bad. Right. You know, I work there and I'm happy to have a job and it's not that bad.
Well, let's take another short break and we'll get back to our conversation and our callers. And again, Spencer Soper is our guest today in Radio Times. He's a senior business reporter for the Morning Call of Allentown. He also writes a column called On the Cheap, featuring clever, quirky things that people do to save money. We asked him to join us today in Radio Times to talk about an investigative story that he's done about an Amazon facility in the Lehigh Valley, rather near Allentown, about the working conditions there. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. If you've worked at a facility like this, we'd love to hear from you. And if you buy things from Amazon, call us as well. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. Since 1918, the Philadelphia Foundation has worked to enhance culture and recreation. The Foundation supports nonprofit organizations that support the arts, provide recreational opportunities, sustain the environment, and promote multicultural connections. The Foundation can help you make a difference for such southeastern Pennsylvania nonprofits today and forever while you receive tax deductions. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philafound.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Afghanistan's brutal crime family, the Haqqani Network, which was behind the recent attack on the U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan. We talk with New York Times correspondent Mark Mazzetti. The network acts as a veritable arm of Pakistan's intelligence agency, according to Admiral Mike Mullen, the departing head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The fertility industry has been in the news with reports that donors have produced dozens of offspring and concerns of accidental incest. We'll take a closer look. Also, Matterhorn author Carl Merlantis on the consequences of combat. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. As you know, Amazon is the largest online retailer in the world, and if you want to buy something, you can probably buy it through Amazon. Our guest, Spencer Soper, learned about some harsh working conditions at a facility operated by Amazon in the Lehigh Valley area here in Pennsylvania. He wrote about it for the Morning Call of Allentown, where he's a senior business writer. There were complaints about not just brutal heat, but brutal heat conditions combined with the demanding workflow, and that's what we're talking about today on Radio Times. And Spencer, we got a lot of callers here that want to get in on the conversation, including, looks like, Mac from Allentown. And Mac, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning. Mr. Soper, the Morning Call online versions of your stories have brought numerous comments to them, but it seems in the last couple of days that the comment sections have been wiped out, at least on my computer. Are you aware of this?
Spencer?
No.
Okay. And I would imagine it that you were following up on that, because I think at one point the two articles generated something like 600 comments to them.
Wow.
And you know, I think it got pretty heated on there on the debate one way or the other. But it just seems a bit strange that it's completely gone.
Well, Mac, I appreciate you calling into Radio Times. And Spencer, you said no. Anything else you want to add to that?
No. I did see the comments. I know that the stories get put into like a more archival system. I don't know if that blips them out. I really don't know.
Are you done with the story? Are you going to continue to investigate it?
Well, we're still looking and we're still hearing from people who work there. So it depends on what we find out.
And in terms of OSHA, how cooperative were they with you in trying to get information about what happened or what was happening at this warehouse?
They were very cooperative. They provided us records in a timely manner and were communicative.
All right. Let me see what Chris from Allentown has to say. And Chris, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
First, I'd like to say I'm a daily listener and I love the show.
Thank you so much.
I'm actually a former permanent employee at Amazon, and I had to leave for medical reasons because it's a very rigorous, monotonous job where you're constantly doing the same thing all the time, and I hurt my lower back. But I just wanted to say, from personal experience, everything that Spencer has written on the Morning Call is absolutely correct. And I've had a personal friend who was pregnant working there this July who couldn't meet production mates rates because she was 7 months pregnant, and they let her go, and she didn't have a fan. They wouldn't give her anything at all to help her out. So I just wanted to make those comments, and I'll take my statements off the air.
Chris, let me just ask you one question. Did you say you were a permanent employee at Amazon? Did you work at one of these facilities?
Yes, I actually worked at the old one that they had before, the Briningsville warehouse. It was a much smaller warehouse before they upgraded to the larger warehouse.
Spencer, anything?
And I also worked at the larger warehouse.
And you did as well. And are you working now?
Yeah, yes, I am working.
Let me give Spencer, Chris, thanks for calling into Radio Time. Spencer, anything you want to add to that?
No, I just appreciate him calling in, and we've heard a lot of feedback just like that call.
And he talked about having a friend who was actually pregnant and working in this facility, but unable to meet the production rates.
Yes, I mean, again, we heard from multiple people who said they had trouble meeting this production rate.
Help us understand, I mean, Allentown is not that far from Philadelphia, but I guess how the recession and then the economic downturn has affected that part of Pennsylvania.
Yes, well, our economy is fairly representative. We're no more or less depressed than the nation. Our unemployment rate, I think, at last look was, just above 9%. Mm-hmm. So it's fairly representative of the national economy. But yes, there are a lot of people who are out of work for a very long time and were excited about opportunities to work with Amazon. The name had some cachet. It was definitely used the prominent Amazon name was used in the marketing of these positions, and people initially were hopeful about working there.
Hopeful that what, that they would have a permanent job or that they would be paid?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that, because another concern that came up from a lot of the workers, particularly the temps, is that they took these jobs with the hope that this could lead to something more stable and regular, and that actually some of the temps we interviewed, particularly last year, the Amazon's peak season is before Christmas, you know, running up to the holidays. And so many of them saying that was kind of dangled in front of them like a carrot. Do a good job, make your rate, work hard. We're going to notice. We're going to see who the hard workers are, and we're going to give those people jobs. But that and that kind of motivated them in the beginning. But the longer they were there, the less likely that permanent prospect became, as they saw more and more people leave and few people get permanent positions. Amazon did say after the story ran that they've converted 850 people from temporary to permanent positions. We've asked follow-up questions just to try to get a sense of turnover rate and that sort of thing. We're not sure how many of those 850 people are still there, because there's even turnover within the permanent Amazon ranks, but they declined to answer those follow-up questions.
And what's the relationship between Integrity Staffing Solutions, ISS, and Amazon?
Well, Integrity Staffing Solutions is basically a third-party vendor that provides people, manpower, to Amazon. So that is the relationship. Amazon pays them. ISS recruits people, does some sort of screening, I believe, and then, you know, assigns people a start date, and they even have managers working, ISS managers working in the warehouses overseeing the ISS employees, so that communication, if you're a temp, is supposed to be through your manager, not through through an Amazon manager.
Let me get Lou. Looks like Lou from Allentown to join us on Radio Times. And Lou, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. A longtime listener and caller.
Great.
Just in the comment, I'm a firefighter in South Whitehall Township, which abuts Upper Macungie Township, where the facility is located. And I know from my colleagues in the fire departments out there, they were running ragged all summer to automatic fire alarms at the facility, because that's the only way those folks could get out of that building during the present heat, was somebody would pull the alarm and they'd have to shoot everybody outside, have a full investigation by the fire department, the fire commissioner in the township, and it was the only way that they could kind of recoup and get out of the building without losing work hours. That's my comment.
Well, Lou, that's quite a comment, and let me give Spencer Soper a chance to respond to that. Spencer, did you know about that?
No, I'd be interested in learning more about that, but I do know that the warehouse is in Upper Macungie Township, is the municipality in which it's located, and emergency personnel response times. The amount of time emergency personnel spend at the warehouse has been a regular topic of discussion, for the township.
And Lou, just to make sure we understand, this is not your company, but you heard from other firefighters that they were called.
Oh yes, well we would hear as we were out on alarms or on our home systems, we would hear them being dispatched to the Brandingsville warehouse quite frequently. I also have a good relationship with the ambulance corps that covers that area, and I know those folks well, and I know that they've spent innumerable hours there on a variety of calls, including as your commentator is making the heat-related issues.
And so someone would pull the alarm, and that would, of course, bring the fire trucks.
Correct, and also get the folks out of the building for a break from whatever was going on at the time.
Wow. Well, Lou, I appreciate the call to Radio Time. Spencer, anything you want to add to that, and then we'll get back to our callers.
No, I mean, just to confirm that we did interview the Citroni Ambulance Corps that serves that area, and we had their comments in the story about the number of hospital transports that they did have to respond there and take several people to the hospital during summer heat waves.
And I mean, it's cooler now, and we did have a hot summer in Pennsylvania this year, but do you think, have you learned whether the conditions are any better in the facility?
just reflecting the temperature. I mean, we've followed up with some of the employees we interviewed and have heard that there haven't been any noticeable changes other than the weather, but it's still been kind of muggy, so I think they're still still warm in there. So that's about it.
Okay, let me get looks like Craig from Moorestown to join us on Radio Times. And Craig, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes.
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead, Craig. Yes.
Hi. As a small business owner, I have one simple question. I didn't read the article, but it seems to me that there's a presumption that the employee should be setting the rate of work as opposed to the employer. Or am I mistaken?
Well, let me put that to Spencer Soper.
I'm sorry, there's a presumption that the employee should set the rate of work as
opposed to the employer's. That's the impression
right.
that he's getting.
Correct.
And he didn't read the article? I just suggest that he read
that's
the article.
Correct. Well, I'm not in Allentown, so I guess I couldn't.
It's online. You can find it at mcall.com/Amazon.
All right, I'll read it then.
Well, and my email's at the bottom of the story. If you have any comments you want to say after reading it, I'd be happy to review them.
Going back to your description of a picker, and again, this is someone who, as you described, Spencer, is about a 10-hour workday. Is that right?
Yes, there's overtime and that sort of thing, but most of the people I interviewed would work a 4-day, 10-hour shift, mm-hmm. 4 10-hour shifts a week, work week, but then there would be overtime requirements and things as the workload demanded.
And in that space, they would literally pick something like 1,200 items?
Yes, that's what the pickers, and one in particular I talked to, said it was about 1,200 an hour. And that person that I interviewed said that he was actually getting, they would have kind of like motivational things going on in the warehouses, like rewarding good workers with either maybe a $5 gift card, and then even a raffle after some period of time for the people who had regularly received these things. And he said he would get these gift cards and even won a laptop for being a good worker, and then he was simultaneously getting written up for not making rate, and he was ultimately terminated for not making rate.
And is $10 to $12 an hour, is that a pretty good hourly rate for this part of Pennsylvania?
I think it's fairly standard for this type of work.
Let me get, looks like Valerie from Mount Airy to join our conversation. And Valerie, go ahead, you're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I am a regular Amazon purchaser. I get a lot of my groceries, and I recommend to my clients, I'm a psychotherapist, books. And I say, pick it up on Amazon. And I am horrified and disappointed that it's yet another retailer that I'm not going to be able to use. And more than that, I think the answer is, ultimately, to boycott. And that's what gives them the message that this is not acceptable.
Kathy, you also have a choice to complain directly to Amazon. Does that seem like an option for you?
Well, one complaint doesn't matter. But you start a boycott, it hits them in the pocketbook, then they listen.
And Spencer, have there been similar calls from your perspective?
Yeah, we've heard a lot of feedback from customers just like this one who read about the conditions and were concerned and either planned to never purchase from Amazon again or initiated contact with Amazon to see what Amazon had to say, and after receiving the feedback decided to not do business with mm-hmm. them again. And some said they're going to, wait a little while, see what happens. But we've also spoken to analysts who said, this is going to be for Amazon's take. This will probably be here today, gone tomorrow, and Amazon will continue to grow with low prices and fast delivery.
Valerie, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And Spencer, we should add that you did talk with a guy in your piece, a Ron Heckman, and he called Amazon a good company. He felt like a satisfied employee.
Yes, and he didn't even dispute anything that the other people were saying. He just had a different perspective on it all, and did think that they were trying to improve things, particularly with the temps. He noticed in particular that he said he did notice that a lot of temps were getting frustrated earlier this year, that it seemed to be the conversion date kept getting pushed back, and he understood why people were frustrated about that, but that the company in recent weeks or months has been converting more people.
Let me get one more caller in before we have to say goodbye, and this is Kathy from Devon. And Kathy, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi. Hi there. I worked a similar job in the early 90s at a book distribution warehouse in the state. This was a summer job while I was in college, and I have two comments. One is that our working conditions were similar. Excessive heat in the summer, and I don't really, you know any way around that when you're basically in a big metal box. Although this warehouse would open up doors and put on fans, and it never really impacted production greatly. You certainly would sweat and work hard, but it didn't impact production, which leads me to my second thought, is that it seems like maybe really it's the calculation of these production rates that are off the wall. And, you know, I haven't read the article, so my question is, you know, do people actually make the rates? And then another thought was, in my experience, workers like myself that were just there for the summer got things that were almost things with really aggressive production rates on it, while the unionized employees got much easier jobs to complete. So maybe you'd have 100 items to fulfill in an hour, but it was, you know, 100 of the same title of book. So that was pretty easy to fulfill, where I might get 100, you know, items to fulfill in an hour, but they're all over the warehouse. And so I'm wondering if that's one reason that they differentiate, you know, permanent employees versus temporary employees. Was there any complaint about getting things with more aggressive production rates if you're a temp employee?
Kathy, thanks for calling into Radio Time. Spencer, is there an answer to that?
Well, there were some concerns about kind of luck of the draw. This is a warehouse that has such a broad range of consumer products. You could be going to fetch a DVD. You could be going to fetch a chainsaw. So you have items of varying size and shape. And I think that some people said the rates were differentiated between large and small. Some were not, but that the that was a concern among some of the workers was that the rate you could kind of get. You could get tough luck depending on which items you had to pick.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times, and I appreciate your work as well. Spencer Soper, thanks.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And you can read his story at the Morning Call of Allentown. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times.